Pensive Galen Starfire, a Ladeshian bard said, seating himself across from Durzo without waiting to be asked.
I'm deciding who to kill. Call me that again and you jump to the front of the line, Eris Starkos.
The bard smiled with the confidence of a man who knows he has perfect white teeth that only set off a handsome face. By the Night Angels. We've been awfully curious about what's been happening for the last few months.
You and society can go to hell, Durzo said.
I think you like the attention, Durzo Blint. If you wanted us dead, we'd be dead. Or are you really bound by this code of retribution? It's of considerable debate in the society.
Still fighting over the same questions, huh?
Don't you all have anything better to do? Talk, talk, talk. Why don't you do something productive for once? We're trying, Durzo. In fact, that's why I'm here. I want to help you.
How kind. You've lost it, haven't you?
Aristarchos asked. Have you lost it, or has it abandoned you? Do the stones really choose their own masters? Durzo noticed he was spinning the knife from finger to finger again. It wasn't to intimidate the Ladeshian, who, laudably enough, didn't even glance at it. It just kept his hands busy. It was nothing. He stopped it.
Here's why I've never been friends with any of you, Aristarchos.
I don't know if your little circle has ever been interested in me, or if it's only interested in my power. Once, I was almost convinced to share some of my mysteries, but I realize that what I share with one of you, I share with all of you. So tell me, why would I give my enemies such power?
Is that what we've come to? Aristarchos asked.
Enemies. Why then do you not wipe us from the face of the earth? You're uniquely suited to such a task.
I don't kill without cause. Fear isn't enough to motivate me. It may be beyond your comprehension, but I can hold power without using it.
Aristarchos stroked his chin. Then you are a better man than many have feared. I see now why you were chosen in the first place.
Aristarchos stood.
Know this, Durzo Blint. I am far from home and have not the means I might wish, but if you call on me, I will give you what help I can, and knowing that you have deemed the cause just will be enough explanation for me.
Good day.
The man walked out of the brothel, smiling and winking at the whores who seemed disappointed to lose his business. He wore his charm like a mask, Durzo saw.
The masks change, but the maskers remain the same, don't they?
Durzo had lived with the bilge waste of humanity for so long, he saw filth in every heart. He knew the filth was there. He was right about that. Filth and darkness were even in Rimbold Drake's heart. But Drake didn't act from that darkness, did he?
No.
That masker, if only that one, had changed. Fear isn't enough to motivate me, he'd said, while planning to murder a child.
What kind of a monster am I?
He was caught now, truly and desperately caught. He'd just killed Corbin Fishhill. The man's death had been sanctioned by the Shinga and the rest of the Nine. Corbin had been managing the guilds as if he were in Kalidor, setting guild against guild, encouraging open war between them, and doing absolutely nothing to regulate brutality within the guilds. Kalidorans did such things in the belief that the best would naturally rise. But the Sakage wanted members, not monsters. Worse, they now had some indication that Corbin actually had been working for Kalidor. That was inexcusable. Not taking the work, but taking it without reporting it to the rest of the Nine. loyalties had to be to the Sakage first. The kill had been sanctioned, and it had been just. That didn't mean that Corbin's friends would accept it. Durzo had killed members of the Nine before, but he always took extra care to conceal whose work it was. Now, Azoth had tromped around his killing grounds for hours, a little before the job was done, and a lot after. Enough people knew or guessed Durzo had taken Azoth as his apprentice that they couldn't fail to link the two. It was sloppy, wet work, they'd say. Maybe Durzo Blint is slipping. Being the best made him a target. The appearance of weakness gave every second-rate wet boy hope that they could move up. Azoth couldn't have known, of course. Still didn't know so many things. But in that flash of blue light from Retribution's blade, Durzo had seen his own death. If he let the boy live, Durzo would die. Sooner or later. And there it was. The divine economy. For someone to live, someone had to die. Durzo Blint made his decision and started drinking.
Master Blint hasn't come to see me.
No, Mama Kay said.
It's been 4 days. You said he wasn't mad anymore, Azoth said, making fists with his hands. He thought he had cut them, but they were fine. Lots of other places on his body hurt, so he hadn't just imagined being beaten. But his hands were fine. 3 days, and he's not mad. Drink this. No, I don't want any more of that stuff. It makes me feel worse.
He regretted the words as soon as he said them. Mama Kay's eyebrows went up, and her eyes went cold. Even huddled in warm blankets in a spare bedroom here in her house, when her eyes turned frosty, nothing could make you feel warm.
Child, let me tell you a story. Have you heard of the Snake of Haran?
Azoth shook his head.
The snake has 7 heads, but each time you cut 1 head off, 2 more grow in its place.
Really? There's really such a thing?
No. In Haran they call it the Snake of Ladesh.
It's imaginary.
Then why did you tell me about it?
Azoth asked.
Are you being deliberately obtuse?
When he didn't answer, she said,
If you'll let me finish, you'll see the story is an analogy. Analogies are lies grown-ups tell.
Why? Being stuck in bed was making Azoth petulant.
Why does anyone tell lies?
Because they're useful. Now drink your medicine and then shut your mouth, Mama Kay said. Azoth knew he was pushing it, so he didn't ask any more. He drank the thick mint and anise-flavored brew.
Right now, the Sakage has its own Snake of Haran, Azoth.
Kylar.
Do you know Corbin Fishhill?
Azoth nodded. Corbin was the handsome, impressive young man who had sometimes come and talked to Jalaliel.
Corbin was one of the 9. He ran the children's guilds.
Was?
Azoth almost squeaked. He wasn't supposed to know Corbin was even important, much less how important.
Durzo killed him 3 days ago. When the baby farms were shut down, the Sakage was given a chance to literally raise its own army. But Corbin was allowing, or encouraging, guild war that was wiping out the slave-born. And he was a spy. The Sakage thought he was a Sioran spy. But now they think he was taking money from Kalidor, and Kalidorans paid him in Sioran gold, probably in case he was found, and also so he wouldn't start spending the money immediately and bring attention to himself. Now that Corbin is dead, Things have been searched, and, unfortunately, there hasn't been any clear answer. If he was Caladoran, he was far more dangerous than we had thought, and the Sakage should have brought him in and had him tortured until they knew for sure, but at the time, they thought it was more important to set a graphic example of what happens to those who mismanage Sakage endeavors. The problem now is bigger. We don't think Corbin was in place long enough to cultivate any loyalty to Calidor among the guilds. Street rats don't care much where their meals come from. But the fact Calidor would work on taking over the guilds tells us that they are thinking long-term. How do you know he wasn't just the easiest person they could get in the Sakage? Mama Kay smiled. We don't. Calidor is putting down some rebellions right now, and it's not going well for them. But the God King has earned a reputation as a man who plans for victory, and my guess is that he thinks it may be years before he's ready to march south, but he wants Sanaria to fall at the slightest blow when he does. If he controls the Sakage, taking the city will be easy. Our problem is that if he was able to get a man as highly placed as Corbin, then there may be dozens of others. The other heads of the snake may show up at any time. Anyone we trust may be working for Calidor. Why is that your problem? Azoth asked. It's my problem, because I'm one of the nine too, Kylar. I'm the mistress of pleasures. Azoth's mouth formed a little O. Always before, the Sakage had been something dangerous, huge, and distant. He supposed it fit. Everyone knew Mama Kay had been a whore and that she was wealthy, but he'd never even thought of it. Being the mistress of pleasures meant that Mama Kay controlled all of the prostitution in Sanaria. Everyone who plied the pleasure trade ultimately answered to her. She smiled. Aside from my girls' more strenuous duties, they also keep their ears open. You'd be amazed at how talkative men can be in front of what they think is just a dumb whore. I'm in charge of the Sakage's spies. I need to know what Calidor is doing. If I don't know, the Sakage doesn't know. And if we don't know, the country may fall. Believe me, we do not want Gareth or Sul as our king. Why are you telling me all this? Azoth said. I'm nobody. Azoth was nobody. You're about to become Kylar Stern, she said. And I think you're smarter than Durzo gives you credit for. I'm telling you because we need you on our side. Azoth was stupid to go wandering the other day, and it may cost you or Durzo your lives. But if you had known what was happening, you wouldn't have gone there. You did the wrong thing, but Durzo shouldn't have beaten you for showing initiative. In fact, I'm sure he's sorry for beating you, though he'll never apologize. It isn't in the man to admit he's wrong. We need you to be more than an apprentice, Kylar. We need you to be an ally. Are you ready for that? Azoth, Kylar, nodded slowly. What do you want me to do?
Chapter 17. Kylar tried to gawk at the right things as he was ushered through the Gyre estate. Azoth, Mama Kay had told him, would gawk at anything big or gold. Baronet Kylar Stern would gawk only at things that were both, and the art. Logan had invited him to visit to make amends for hitting him, and Kylar's first job for the Sakage was to make sure they became friends. The porter escorted him to another, better-dressed man. Kylar almost greeted him as Duke Gyre, before realizing he must be the Gyre's chamberlain.
The chamberlain took him through a vast entry hall with dual stairs that climbed 3 stories, flanking an enormous marble statue of 2 men, twins, facing each other in battle, each seeing the same opening in the other's defense, each lunging. It was one of the most famous statues in the world, Mama Kay had told Kylar. The Grask twins' doom. In history, Mama Kay said, the Grask twins had been heavily armored, and during a long battle, each had lost the thin tabards that at the time were all men wore over plate mail, and all that identified them if they were separated from their standard-bearers. They had indeed killed each other, though each had avoided the other in earlier battles. Here, the men were naked, except for a shield and sword. Because of the shield's placement, each was seeing the twin's face for the first time, even as he struck the death blow. The chamberlain took Kylar up the stairs and down 1 long wing of the estate. The hallway was wider than most of the alleys in the warrens. Both sides were crowded with marble busts and paintings of men speaking, men fighting, men seizing women, families moving, women mourning, the aftermath of battles, and horrible monsters boiling out of gaps in the ground. Every picture was framed with heavy gold leaf. Most were big. Walking behind the chamberlain, Kylar could gawk as much as he wanted, and he did. Then they stopped at a huge door. The chamberlain rapped on it with the staff he carried, and opened the door to a library with dozens of shelves in orderly rows, and the walls lined with books and scrolls to a height of 2 stories.
My lord, Baronet Kylar's turn.
Lord Gyre rose from a table with an open scroll laid across it. Kylar! I was just finishing... I borrowed the scroll from... Oh, never mind. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me, Duke Gyre. Your estate is beautiful. The statue of the Grask twins is breathtaking. He was reciting it the way Mama Kay had taught him. But now he meant it.
Please, Logan. You're most kind.
You really like it? Logan asked.
You're most kind gave him away. Logan was trying as hard to be an adult as Kylar was. Kylar was nervous because he was a fraud, but Duke Logan felt like a fraud too. The title was too big and too new for him to feign comfort convincingly, so Kylar answered honestly.
Actually, I think it's amazing. I just wish they weren't naked.
Logan burst out laughing. I know. Most of the time I don't notice it anymore, but every once in a while I come in the door and there's 2 huge naked men in my house. Because of my new duties, I'm meeting all of my father's retainers and friends again. Really, it's a chance for ladies to introduce their daughters and hope I fall madly in love. I was greeting a lady and her daughter. I won't name names, but they are beautiful women and very prim, very modest. So I'm pretty tall, right? And they both have to really look up to look me in the eye, and as I'm talking, and I'm in the middle of a story, and the mom is tittering and the daughter looks utterly captivated, and I start to wonder if I've got something in my hair or on my ear or something because they both keep glancing just a little bit to the side.
Oh, no,
Kylar said, laughing.
I glance over my shoulder, and there's... Well, there, 3 times life-size is marble genitalia, and there's this moment where they realize that I've noticed that they've been looking over my shoulder the whole time, and I realize this is the first time that the daughter has ever seen a naked man, and I totally forget what story I was telling them.
They laughed together. Kylar, desperately thankful that Logan had given enough context so he could figure out what genitalia meant. Did all nobles talk like this? What if the next time Logan gave the punchline without the context? Logan pointed to a portrait on the library wall of a square-jawed, bald man dressed in an unfamiliar style. I have to thank him for that. My great-great-great-grandfather, the art lover. Kylar smirked, but he felt he'd been slapped. Logan knew things about his great-great-great-grandfather. Kylar didn't even know who his father was. There was a silence, and Kylar knew it was his turn to fill it.
I heard that the Grask twins actually led like 6 battles against each other.
You know their story? Logan asked.
Not many people our age do.
Belatedly, Kylar realized the risk of posing as a story lover to this man who loved books and could actually read them.
I really like old stories, Kylar said, but my parents don't really have any use for me wasting my time filling my head with stories.
You really do like stories?
Aline always starts pretending to snore when I talk about history.
Aline? Oh, Aline Gunder, Prince Aline Gunder the 10th. Logan's world was really different.
Look at this.
He beckoned Kylar to the table.
Here, read this part.
Be happy to if I could read. Kylar's heart seized up. His disguise was still so fragile.
You're making me feel like my tutors, he said, waving it off. I don't want to read for an hour while you're twiddling your thumbs.
Why don't you tell me the good parts?
I feel like I'm doing all the talking, Logan said, suddenly awkward. It's kind of rude.
Kylar shrugged.
I don't think you're being rude. Is it a new story or what?
Logan's eyes lit up, and Kylar knew he was safe.
No, it's the end of the Alcestia cycle, right before the 7 kingdoms fall. My father's having me study the great leaders of the past. In this case, Jorsen Alcestes, of course. When they were under siege at Black Barrow, his right-hand man, Ezra the Mad... Well, it wasn't Black Barrow yet, and Ezra didn't go hide out in Ezra's woods for another 50 years or something. Anyway, Ezra's maybe the best magus ever, behind Emperor Jorsen Alcestes himself. They're under siege at what's now Black Barrow, and Ezra starts making the most amazing stuff. The warhammers of Orin Razin, fire and lightning traps, even untalented soldiers can use. Kurok, the Sword of Power, lures, the Staff of Law, and then these 6 magic artifacts, Kakari. They each look like a glowing ball. But the 6 champions can squeeze one, and it melts and covers their whole bodies like a second skin and gives them power over their element. Arrakis Daedruel gets this skin of silver liquid metal that makes him impervious to blades. Corvir Blackwell becomes Corvir the Red, the Master of Fire. Trace Arvigalania goes from grossly ugly to the most beautiful woman of the era. Orin Razin gets earth, weighs 1,000 pounds, and turns his skin to stone. Irania Blokvai gets the power of everything green and growing. Shad Marlin gets water and can suck the very liquid from a man's blood. The thing that has always made me curious is that Jorsen Alcestes was a great leader. He brought together so many talented people, and lots of them were difficult and egotistical, and he put them in harness together, and they worked. But at the end, he insults one of his best friends, Achilles Thorn, and gives a Kakari to Shad Marlin instead, whom he doesn't even like. Do you know Achilles Thorn? I've heard the name, Kylar offered.
That much was true. Sometimes the guild rats would huddle around a window to one of the taverns when a bard visited, but they could only hear bits and pieces of the stories. Achilles was this amazing fighter, but a noble fool, no subtlety. He hated lies, politics, and magic. But put a sword in his hand, and he'd go charging an enemy force solo if he had to.
He was so crazy and so good that his men would follow him anywhere. But he was all about honor, and seeing lesser men honored before him was a huge insult. It was that insult that led Achelous to betray Jorson. How could Jorson have missed it? He had to have known he was insulting him.
"What do you think?"
Kylar asked. Logan scrubbed a hand through his hair. "It's probably something boring, like that there was a war going on, and everyone was exhausted and starving and not thinking clearly, and Jorson just made a mistake."
"So what does that teach you about being a leader?" Kylar asked.
Logan looked perplexed. "Eat your vegetables and get enough sleep? How about be nice to your inferiors, or they might kick your ass?" Kylar suggested.
"Are you asking me to spar, Baronet Stern?"
"Your exalted dukeliness, it will be my pleasure to take you down."
Chapter 18. Kylar stepped into the safe house, flushed from his victory. He'd got 3 touches to Logan's 2. Logan fought better, but as Mama Kay had told Kylar, he'd also grown a foot in the last year and hadn't adjusted to his new height yet.
"Not only did I just make Logan Gyre my friend," Kylar said, "I also beat him in sparring."
Durzo didn't even look up from the calcinator. He turned the flame up higher beneath the copper dish.
"Good. Now never spar with him again. Hand me that."
Hurt. Kylar took a flask from under the whirling tubes of the alembic and gave it to him. Durzo poured the thick blue mixture into the calcinator. For a moment, it sat there, still. Small bubbles began forming, and within moments, the mixture was boiling rapidly.
"Why not?"
Kylar asked.
"Get the slops, boy."
Kylar grabbed the pig's slop bowl and brought it to the table.
"We fight differently from what any of this city's swordmasters teach. If you spar with Logan, you will adopt his by-the-book style and become a worthless fighter, or you'll give away that you're being taught something utterly different, or both."
Kylar scowled at the calcinator. His master was right, of course, and even if he weren't, his word was law. The blue mixture was now a dark blue powder. Durzo lifted the copper plate from the flames with a thick wool pad and scraped the powder into the slop bowl. He grabbed another copper plate and poured more of the blue mixture into it and put it above the flames, setting the first aside to cool with a heavy mitt.
"Master, do you know why Jorson Alcestis would insult his best friend by not giving him a Kakari?"
"Maybe he asked too many questions."
"Logan said Achelous Thorn was the most honorable of Jorson's friends, but he betrayed Jorson, and that led to the fall of the 7 Kingdoms, Kylar said.
"Most people aren't strong enough for our creed, Kylar. So they believe comforting illusions like the gods, or justice, or the basic goodness of man. Those illusions fail in war. It breaks men. That's probably what happened to Achelous."
"Are you sure?" Kylar asked.
Logan's reading of it had been so different.
"Sure?" Blint asked, scornfully. "I'm not sure about what the nobles here did 7 years ago when they ended slavery. How would anyone be sure about what happened hundreds of years ago, far away? Take that to the pig."
Kylar picked up the slops and took them to the pig they'd recently acquired for Master Blint's experiments. As he was returning, he saw Blint staring at him as if about to say something. Then there was a small whoosh as flame leaped from the copper plate behind Master Blint. Before Kylar could flinch, Blint whirled around. A phantom hand stretched out from his hands and grabbed the meal plate directly from the fire and set it down on the table. Then the hand was gone. It happened so fast Kylar wasn't sure he hadn't imagined it. The plate was smoking, and what should have been blue powder was now a black crust. A black crust that Kylar had no doubt he would soon be scraping off until the copper shone. Blint swore.
See you get caught up in the past, and you become useless in the present. Come on, let's see if that stinking pig's still alive. Then we need to do something with your hair.
The pig wasn't still alive, and after the amount of poison it had ingested, it wasn't safe to eat. So Kylar spent half the day cutting it into pieces and burying it. After that, Master Blint made him strip to the waist and rubbed a pungent paste through his hair. It burned his scalp, and Blint made him keep it in for an hour. But when he finally rinsed his hair clean, Blint showed him his own reflection in the glass, and he barely recognized himself. His hair was white blonde.
"Just be thankful you're young, or I would have had to smear it on your eyebrows, too," Blint said. "Now get dressed. The Azoth clothes. The Azoth persona."
"I get to go with you? On a job?"
"Get dressed."
"I understand why apparent consumption is 900 Gunders. I'm sure you have to do multiple poisonings to mimic the disease," the noble said. "But 1,500 for apparent self-murder? Ridiculous. Stab your man and put the knife in his hand."
"How about we start again?" Master Blint said quietly.
"You speak as if I'm the best wet boy in the city, and I'll speak as if there's a chance this side of hell that I'll take the job." The tension sat thick in the upstairs room of the inn. Lord General Brant Aegon wasn't pleased, but he took a breath, ran a hand through his gray hair, and said,
"Why does faking a suicide cost 1,500 gold?"
"A properly staged suicide takes months," Master Blint said, "depending on the debtor's history. If I'm after a known melancholic, that can be shortened to 6 weeks. If he's tried to suicide before, it can be as little as a week. I gain access in one way or another and administer special concoctions."
Azoth was trying to pay attention, but there was something about being back in his old clothes that made the illusions of the last weeks come crashing down. Kylar was gone, and not because Azoth was following orders and pretending to be Azoth. Kylar had been a mask of confidence. It had fooled Logan, and it had fooled Azoth for a little while, but the mask had fallen away. He was Azoth. He was weak. He didn't understand what he was doing here or why, and he was scared. Blint continued, not so much as glancing at him.
"The debtor becomes depressed, withdrawn, suspicious. Symptoms gradually worsen. Then maybe a favorite pet dies. The target is already peevish and paranoid, and soon he lashes out at his friends. The friends who visit, at least those who take refreshment, grow irritable while they are with the debtor. They quarrel. They stop visiting. Sometimes the target writes the note himself. Sometimes he even commits the suicide himself, though I monitor that closely to make sure he chooses an appropriate method for the effect desired. When given proper time, no one suspects anything but self-murder. The family itself will often hush up the details and scatter what little evidence there is."
"By the king's high beard! Is such a thing possible?"
the Lord General asked.
"Possible? Yes. Difficult? Very. It takes a considerable number of carefully mixed poisons. Do you know that everyone reacts differently to poisons, and a huge amount of my time? If a forged note is required, the target's correspondence and journals are analyzed so that not only the handwriting, but also the writing style and even certain choices of wording are identical."
Durzo smiled wolfishly.
"Assassination is an art, my lord."
"And I
and the city's most accomplished artist. "How many men have you killed?" the Lord General asked. "Suffice it to say, I never idle." The man fiddled with his beard and continued looking through the handbill Master Blint had given him, obviously unsettled. "May I ask about others, Master Blint?" he said, suddenly respectful. "I prefer that you only inquire about those deaths you're seriously considering," Master Blint said. "Why is that?" "I value secrets very highly, as I must. So I don't like to discuss my methodology, and to be honest, knowing too much tends to frighten those who employ me. I had a client some time ago who was very proud of his defenses. He asked me how I'd fulfill a contract on him. He irritated me. So I told him. Afterward, he tried to hire another wet boy to kill me. He was turned down by every professional in Scenaria. He ended up hiring an amateur. You give yourself the status of a legend, the Lord General said, his thin face pinching. Of course Durzo Blint was a legend. Who would hire him if they didn't know that? At the same time, hearing Master Blint speak of his trade to a noble, to someone like Count Drake, was eerie. It was like Azoth's two worlds were being pressed uncomfortably close to each other, and he could feel the noble's awe in himself. In the guild, Durzo Blint had been a legend because he had power, because people were afraid of him, and he never had to be afraid of anyone. That was what had drawn Azoth to him. But this noble was awed for different reasons. To him, Durzo Blint was a creature of the night. He was a man who could come violate those things he held dear. He undermined all of what the Lord General had thought safe. The man didn't look afraid. He looked disgusted. "I'm not suggesting that I terrify every wet boy in the city," Master Blint smiled. "The fact is that we professionals are, if not a close group, at least a small one. We're colleagues, some of us even friends. The second wet boy he went to was Scarred Rabble." "I've heard of him," Brant Aegon said. "Apparently the second best assassin in the city." "Wet boy," Blint corrected. "And a friend of mine. He told me what this client was doing. After that, well, if a military metaphor works better for you, it would be like trying a small raid on a city that was expecting it instead of an unsuspecting city. In the second case, it might work. In the first, it's suicide."
"I see,"
the Lord General said. He paused for a moment, apparently surprised Master Blint knew who he was, then suddenly grinned. "And you're a tactician, too." "How so?" "You haven't had many contracts taken out on you since you started telling that story, have you?" Master Blint smiled broadly. These were two men, Azoth saw, who understood each other. "Not a one. After all, diplomacy is an extension of warfare," Blint said.
"We usually say that warfare is an extension of diplomacy," Brant Aegon said. "But I think I agree with you. I once found myself outnumbered and forced to hold a position against the Lee Nought for 2 days to wait for reinforcements. I had some captives, so I put them in a vulnerable position and told their guards we would receive reinforcements at dawn. During the fighting, the prisoners were allowed to get free and promptly told their superiors the news. The Lee Nought army was so disheartened that they held back until we had been reinforced. That diplomacy saved our lives, which brings us back to the matter at hand," the Lord General said. "I need some diplomacy that's not on this list of yours. I'm afraid I've not been completely forthright with you, Master Blint," the Lord General said. "I'm here for the King.
Master Blint's face went suddenly devoid of emotion.
I understand that by telling you that we might lose the man who provided me with your name, but the king deems this to be worth risking the lives of both a contact and one of his ministers, namely myself.
You haven't done anything foolish like surround the building with soldiers, have you? Master Blint asked.
Nothing of the kind. I'm here alone.
Then you've made one wise choice today.
More than one. We've chosen you, Master Blint, and I've chosen to be honest with you, which I hope you appreciate. As you know, the king's wealthy, but not politically or militarily strong. That's a bitter pill, but it's not news. Our kings haven't been strong for 100 years. Elaine Gunder wishes to change that. But, in addition to internal struggles of which you no doubt know more than I'd care to learn, the king has recently learned of some rather devious plots to steal vast sums of money, not only from the treasury, but in a multitude of schemes, also from almost every nobleman in the country. The idea being, we think, that Cenaria becomes so impoverished that we'll be unable to maintain an army.
Sounds like a lot of money to steal without anybody noticing, Master Blint said.
The Chancellor of the Exchequer has noticed. He's the one arranging it. But no one else has noticed. Yet. The schemes are little short of brilliant. The plot won't even ripen for 6 or 10 years. Men are being placed in key positions and have, as yet, have done nothing wrong.
There's more. Much more. But you don't need to know it.
What do I need to know? Blint asked, his eyes heavy-lidded.
I've made a study of you, Master Blint, the Lord General said. Though information about you is difficult to find, everyone knows that the Sakage holds an enormous amount of power here. People outside the country know it. Kalidor knows it. The king needs you for more than 12 jobs, spanning years. Some will involve simple assassination, some will involve information planting, and some will not involve killing at all, but simply being seen. God King Ursul must believe the Sakage and its assets have an alliance with us.
You want me to become a government agent?
Not exactly.
And I suppose you'd give me a pardon for all I've done? Master Blint asked.
I've been authorized to offer that.
Master Blint stood, laughing.
No, Lord General. Good day.
I'm afraid I can't take no for an answer.
The king has forbidden it.
I do hope you're not planning on threatening my life, Master Blint said.
First, the Lord General said, looking at Azoth for the first time, we'll kill the boy.
Chapter 19. Master Blint shrugged.
So?
And we'll kill your lover. I believe her name's Vonda.
You can kill the bitch. But that might give you some trouble, considering she's 4 months dead.
The Lord General didn't even pause. And we'll kill this Mama Karenna, who seems to be your only friend. Then we'll come after you.
I don't want it to be this way, but this is what the king offers.
You're making 2 mistakes, Master Blint said.
First, you're assuming that I value other people's lives more than my own.
How can you know what I do and believe such a thing?
Second, you're assuming that I value my own life. Please understand. I'm under orders. Personally, I'd rather have nothing to do with you,
the Lord General said.
I think it's beneath the dignity of a king to hire criminals. I believe it's immoral and foolish for him to put money in your purse rather than chains on your wrists. I find you abhorrent. A wreck of a human being barely resembling what once must have been a man. but the king has decided we need a sellsword like you. I'm a soldier. I've been sent to get you, and I won't fail.
And you're making a tactical blunder, Master Blint said. The king might kill my apprentice, my friend, and even me, but at the least, he will have lost his Lord General. A poor trade.
I don't think he will find my death to be such a very great loss, the Lord General said.
Ah, figured that out, have you? Blint asked. This may be the first time you've seen me, Brant Aegon, but it isn't the first time I've seen you. The Lord General looked puzzled. So you've seen me. So have half the people in the city. Does your wife still crowd your side of the bed? Sweet, isn't it? Does she still wear that drab nightgown with the daisies embroidered on the hem? You really love her, don't you? Lord General Aegon froze. You call me abhorrent? Durzo asked. You owe me your life.
What?
Didn't you ever wonder why you got a promotion instead of a knife in the back? From his eyes, even Azoth could tell that the Lord General had.
I was in your house the night King Davin died, when you and Regnus Gyre met. I was to kill your wife as a warning to you. Later, the prince would offer you a better marriage to a young noblewoman who would be able to give you sons. And I was authorized to kill both you and Regnus if you were plotting treason. I spared you. And I don't get paid unless I leave corpses. I don't expect your gratitude, Lord General, but I demand your respect. Lord General Aegon's face went gray.
You told Aeline that my price was the promotion. He thought he bought me off with a promotion rather than a wife.
Azoth could see him mentally reviewing comments he must have heard over the last 4 months, and getting sicker and sicker.
Why?
You're the illustrious general, the old war hero.
You tell me, Durzo sneered. Putting me in charge of the army divided the Sakage's enemies. It kept the king from putting someone he could trust in charge of the military.
You bastards have got people everywhere, don't you?
Me? I'm just a sellsword. I'm just a wreck of a human being. The general's face was still gray, but his back never bent an inch.
You've given me much to think about, Master Blint. Though I still believe the murders you've committed merit hanging, I dishonored you and myself with my hasty words. I apologize. My apology, however, has no effect on the king's determination that you serve him.
Get out, Master Blint said. Get out. If you reconsider your threats, I'll be here for a few minutes.
The general rose, and watching Master Blint carefully, walked to the door. He opened it, and kept his eyes on Master Blint until he closed the door behind himself. Azoth heard his steps echo down the hall. Master Blint stared at the door and scooted back from the table. Instead of relaxing now that the general was gone, he tensed. Everything about him spoke of potential action. He looked like a mongoose waiting for a serpent to strike.
Step away from the door, Azoth, he said. Stand by the window. There was no hesitation. Azoth had learned that lesson. He didn't have to understand. He just had to obey. He heard a crash on the stairs and loud cursing. Azoth stood by the window and looked at Master Blint, but the man's pockmarked face betrayed nothing. Moments later, the door banged open. The Lord General lurched in, sword drawn.
"What have you done?"
he roared. His knees bowed, and he leaned heavily against the doorframe to keep from falling. Master Blint didn't say anything. The General blinked and tried to straighten, but a spasm passed through his body as his stomach cramped.
It passed, and he said,
"How?"
"I put a contact poison on the door latch," Master Blint said. "It seeps right through the skin."
"But if we reached a deal,"
the Lord General said, "I'd have opened the door for you. If you'd worn gloves, I had other plans. Now, I want you to listen very closely. The king is an incompetent, treacherous, foul-mouthed child. So I'm going to make this very clear. I'm a first-rate wet boy. He's a second-rate king. I won't work for him. If you want, you can hire me yourself. I'll kill the king, but I won't kill for him, and there's no way you or he can pressure me. I know he won't believe that, because Aline Gunder is the kind of man who believes he can get whatever he wants. So here's why he's going to believe." Master Blint stood. "First, I'm going to leave a message for him tonight in the castle. Second, you're going to investigate what happened to Count Yosar Glynn. He was the client who betrayed me. Third, there's what has already happened to you. And fourth, do sit, Aegon, and put away the sword. It's insulting." Lord General Aegon crashed into a chair. The long sword fell from his fingers. He didn't appear to have the strength to pick it up. Regardless, his eyes were still clear, and he was hearing every word Master Blint said. "Lord General, I don't care who he kills. I know you have this inn surrounded, that there are crossbowmen covering the windows of this room. They don't matter. More importantly, the king's threats don't matter. I'll be no man's lapdog. I serve who I will, when I will, and I will never serve Aline Gunder. Azoth, come here." Azoth went to his master, wondering why Blint had used his name. He stood in front of Master Blint, who rested his hands on Azoth's shoulders, and turned him to face General Aegon. "Azoth here is my best apprentice. He's agile. He's smart. He learns things after being told once. He works tirelessly. Azoth, tell the general what you've learned about life." Without hesitation, Azoth said, "Life is empty. Life is meaningless. When we take a life, we aren't taking anything of value. Wet boys are killers. That's all we do. That's all we are. There are no poets in the bitter business." "Lord General," Blint said, "are you with me?"
"I'm with you,"
the general said, fire raging in his eyes. Master Blint's voice was ice.
"Then know this.
I'd kill my own apprentice before I'd let you use him against me." The general jerked sharply in his chair, as if shocked. He was staring at Azoth. Azoth followed his gaze to his own chest. Several inches of bloodied steel were protruding from him. Azoth saw them and felt an uncomfortable pushing, spreading sensation from his back all the way through his center. It seemed cool, then warm, then painful. He blinked his eyes slowly and looked back to the general, whose eyes were full of horror. Azoth looked at the steel. He recognized that blade. He'd cleaned it that day he went looking for Doll Girl. He hoped Master Blint would at least wipe it down before he brought it back for Azoth to clean. It had filigree on the blade that held blood if you let it dry there. Azoth had had to use the point of a stiletto to pick it out. It took hours. Then Azoth was drawn to the location of the dagger. At that angle on a child's chest, it would have clipped the fat vessel above the heart. If so, the deader would go down as soon as the dagger was drawn out. There would be a lot of blood. The deader would die within seconds. Azoth's body jerked as the dagger disappeared. He was vaguely aware of his knees folding. he slumped over sideways and felt something warm spilling over his chest. The wood planks of the floor jostled him unmercifully as he sprawled over them. He lay facing up. Master Blint was holding a bloody dagger in his hand and saying something.
"Did Master Blint just stab me?"
Azoth couldn't believe it. What had he done? He thought Master Blint had been pleased with him. It must have been Dahlgirl. He must have still been mad about it. It had seemed things were going so well. There was white gold light everywhere. And he was warm. So warm.
Chapter 20.
Your Majesty, please!
King Aelin Gunder the Ninth threw himself down into his throne.
Brant! It's one man! One!
He swore a stream of curses.
You'd have me send my family to the country for fear of one man?
Your Majesty,
Lord General Brant Aegon said,
the definition of man might not cover Durzo Blint. I understand the implications.
Indeed. Do you know the talk it will cause if I send my family away on a moment's notice?
The king cursed again, unconsciously.
I know what they say about me. I know.
I'll not give them this to drool on, Brant.
Your Majesty, this assassin is not given to idle threats. For the sake of all that's holy, he murdered his own apprentice just to make a point.
A sham. Come on, General. You were drugged. You didn't know what was going on.
My body was afflicted, not my mind. I know what I saw.
The king sniffed, then curled his lip as he caught the faint odor of brimstone in the air.
Damn it! Can't those idiots make anything work?
One of the ducts that carried hot air from the Voss Island crack just north of the castle had broken again.
He doesn't appreciate how much the engineers save us every year by heating the entire castle with pipes embedded in the very stones. He doesn't care that the turbines spinning in the wind rising from the crack give him the power of 200 windmills. That he smells brimstone once a fortnight infuriates him.
Aegon wondered what god Cenaria had offended to deserve such a king. He should have pushed Regnus Gyre. He should have spelled it out to him more clearly. He should have lied to him about what would happen to Nalia's children by Aelin. He could have served Regnus proudly. Proudly and honorably.
Maybe you saw him kill a boy, the king said. Who cares?
You should. Regnus would have.
It was obviously some street rat he picked up for the purposes of impressing you.
With all due respect, sire, you're mistaken. I've dealt with formidable men. I've faced Dorgon Dunwall in single combat. I've fought under Lord Greyblin's Laenort Lancers.
Yes, yes, 1,000 goddamn battles from my goddamn father's time. Very impressive, the king said. But you never learned anything about ruling, did you?
General Aegon stiffened.
Not like you have, Your Majesty.
Well, if you had, General, you'd know that you can't damage your own reputation.
He cursed long and unfluently again.
Flee my own castle in the night!
There was no working with him. The man shamed Aegon, and he should have shamed himself. Yet Aegon was sworn to him, and he'd decided long ago that an oath measured the man who gave it. It was like his marriage. He wouldn't take back the vows simply because his wife couldn't give him children. But did vows hold when your own king had plotted to take your life? And not in honorable battle, but with an assassin's blade in the night? That had been before Aegon had sworn his allegiance to the man, however. Now that he had sworn, it didn't matter that
had he known then what he knew now, he would have chosen to die rather than serve Aelin Gunder the Ninth.
Your Majesty, may I at least have permission to hold an exercise tonight for my guards, and include your mage? The captain is in the habit of doing such things unannounced,